We know that in the world of construction, honest contractors get underbid, right? And so if we can address the ways that people are earning money off of the labors of others and not paying them their fair share, we think that everybody benefits. There's some movement towards really bringing criminal charges. You know, these are laws. This is theft. This is a wide-scale form of theft.
Welcome to Stolen, a special series within the Grit podcast that will investigate tax fraud, wage theft, and misclassification in the construction industry. Hi, I'm Joe Cadwell, president of the Northwest Carpenters Union and host of the show, and I'm proud to bring to you this new series built to expose these greed-driven crimes and give you the tools needed to fight back against them. To do this, I will be talking with labor industry professionals who work to bring cheating contractors to justice. Together, we will break down this complex issue to learn how this bane of the building trades affects the well-being of our unions, our contractors, and our communities. Along the way, we will deconstruct case files and complaints that workers have brought against the cheating contractors who lurk in the underground economy. In true crime fashion, a lot of these stories have twists and turns that you've got to hear to believe. This first episode coincides with the UBC's Tax Fraud Days of Action, which starts on April 14th, and is designed to draw national attention to this issue. In the months to come, I look forward to bringing to light the tactics used by unscrupulous operators who manipulate the system to put more money into their pockets while jeopardizing our ability to provide for ourselves and our families. It's a known fact that 1 in 5 construction workers are intentionally misclassified by cheating contractors. This corruption results in losses over $8.4 billion a year in revenue and denies honest contractors who play by the rules and the workers they employ opportunities to excel and grow financially. You heard that right, $8.4 billion with a B, dollars every year. Now that's a whole lot of lying, cheating, and stealing. To be clear, this is not about workers skipping out on paying their fair share. This is about dishonest employers intentionally cheating the American taxpayer and the working middle class to fatten their bank accounts. As I said earlier, these greed-driven crimes are wrong and they need to stop. So if you're ready to learn more, let's get to it. My guests today are Jeanette Aranda and Ashley Harrison. Jeanette is the Labor Compliance Manager for Northwest Carpenters, and Ashley is an investigator with the City of Seattle Office of Labor Standards. Also joining the conversation is friend of the show, Matt Swanson, the Political Director of the Northwest Carpenters Union. In this kickoff episode, we will be discussing the nuts and bolts of wage theft, the power of our unions working in partnership with local government agencies to go after crooked contractors, and how this collaboration benefits our members and the community at large. I opened up our conversation by asking Jeanette to explain more about tax fraud in construction.
Well, unfortunately, it's a serious problem. It is widespread in construction and every other industry that exists in this country. The Northwest Council of Carpenters, what we did was we created a strategic plan with the Office of Labor Standards and Casa Latina, which is a nonprofit organization. And what we came together to try to fight tax fraud, wage theft. We triage complaints. There's a lot of low wage workers that go to Casa Latina with complaints that from construction that were never paid. We kind of just came together and we review complaints and we triage to decide which enforcement agency to take the cases to, because there's cases in all facets, whether it be state, local, or federal law. And we review the complaints and then we decide where those complaints are going to go. If they go to the Office of Labor Standards, Ashley and her colleague Darren, they conduct the investigations. There's also referrals made to the state and to the federal agencies that handle wage theft and tax fraud. Or there could be other issues that we also help workers with. But that's how we came together to create this strategic plan on construction.
And these workers that are being affected by the cheating contractors, they're not union contractors. So why would the council be concerned?
Well, it's important to create a level playing field for all construction work. My work is to work to find violations in non-union or non-union contractors, educate workers and help them get what is rightfully owed. It also helps us take out the bad guys so that there is more work and that people are paid fairly across the board, regardless if you're union or non-union.
And that's exactly right on that point. I mean, everybody's affected by this issue. First of all, I mean, there are sometimes violations can occur even within a union setting. You know, there are a lot of aspects to these laws, but more than anything, you know, we really aim to raise the floor, you know, thinking about low wage and vulnerable workers. If we ensure that there is a minimum standard that's there, that absolutely benefits everybody who's working in that context. And like Jeanette said, we're, you know, looking for those bad actors. You know, we know that in the world of construction, honest contractors get underbid, right? And so if we can address the ways that people are earning money off of the labors of others and not paying them their fair share, we think that everybody benefits, everyone, especially everyone who's trying to play by the rules and the workers who should be getting paid properly.
Matt, how does politics fit into all of this?
As you know, Joe, I think one of the things that is really important to our political efforts is the issues that we highlight. And April 14th through the 17th are our nationwide days of action where we call attention to this issue in the industry. We call it our tax fraud day of action. So carpenters, locals, and councils across the country are working on this because we actually studied this. $8.4 billion each year are lost in just the tax revenues from contractors that are cheating their workers in construction. That is just the construction sector. And I think one of the things we try to do is look at, like the Office of Labor Standards, where they're doing innovative work. How is that actually making an impact on the marketplace? What is it doing to raise those standards, as Ashley spoke about? You know, how do we raise the floor? And then how are we coordinating? Because our industry, probably more so than just about anything out there, is really complicated when it comes to bringing cases, and workers often find out later that maybe they've been cheated and they need to know where to go. So having resources like the Office of Labor Standards makes a big difference. And I think what we're trying to shine a light on is that there's some really innovative work being done out there that we need more cities and counties and states looking into, and just how do we coordinate and bring our labor unions, community organizations, and public agencies together to fight this epidemic in our industry.
How did Seattle get sort of on the forefront of this, Ashley? What was the impetus to step up and look out for construction in particular?
Well, in terms of construction in particular, you know, the Office of Labor Standards has traditionally been a complaint-based agency. So people come to us with their concerns, but there are also industries that are out there that we know from kind of national studies and from the work of other agencies where there are a lot of violations occurring, but not a lot of complaints. And we were not hearing from a lot of people. And sometimes that can actually indicate that people don't even know their rights at a baseline level. And we want to make sure that we reach those people. And so this partnership has been really key in helping us to reach workers and helping to ensure that people know about their rights. You know, the carpenters do a phenomenal job of really getting the word out. That's so key. And if you don't mind, I'll take a moment too, just to talk about the link between the wage theft and tax fraud, if I'm not getting too far ahead of us in the conversation. But one thing that we see is that when employers underreport people's hours, if they say that you work a certain amount that is less, like you're not getting paid overtime, right? You're not getting paid the correct rate. You're not getting paid for all the hours you work. You have to work through meal and rest breaks. You know, someone's kind of getting more than they're paying for there. And at the same time, they're saving on their payroll tax. State and federal payroll taxes, not paying the right amount into workers' comp. And then people are also harmed when they're out of work, right? Thinking about unemployment, right? If your hours are underreported there, you might not even have enough hours tracked to qualify, much less be getting paid out at the right rate. And that's something we've seen a lot of with the pandemic too. So just wanted to take a moment to explain, because my office doesn't do anything specifically related to taxes, but these are linked issues, absolutely.
So it sounds like there's a lot of different components going on. And I know for my listeners and myself included, a story to kind of help drive home what we're talking about would be super helpful. Do you have any cases that you've dealt with recently?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have two that have actually come forward through this partnership and through this intake process that we've done together, and determined that these were good ones for our office because the work took place in Seattle. And so there was a small case which closed recently where there were actually two day laborers hired in succession off of Craigslist. And we took this case because they were saying that they worked this time and then didn't get paid at all. They were unable to complete the job because there were some underlying issues there that the employer hadn't identified. And when they weren't able to complete it, the employer said, well, job's not done. We're not going to pay you. So complete non-payment of folks who are in a really vulnerable spot. You know, they're kind of gigging. They don't have steady work. It's not a union union job. And they're just trying to kind of trying to get by. And so we were really concerned when we heard that, because that suggests that could be somebody's business model, right? That they're kind of hiring people who then have little recourse, not keeping any records of the hours worked and just not paying. And so our goal in an investigation is to get workers the money that they're owed and to bring employers into compliance, make sure that they're following the laws that are set out here. And so we called and we said, we have this information. You know, people are alleging that you didn't pay them for hours they worked. Is it true? Are you willing to pay this now to settle the issue? And unfortunately, they were not willing to do that. And so we opened a full investigation, got testimony from workers, got records from employers, everything, you know, the whole story, everything was upheld. Everything the workers said, they had text messages, you know, proving their case, showing exactly their communications with the guy and him saying, I'm not going to pay you. And so it was, you know, easy to collect the evidence to say, well, there's been a violation here, and to go back to the employer and say, we've completed our investigation. Are you now willing to settle? Are you willing to pay both what you owe and some additional damages, because you've drawn this out? You know, you've refused to pay people and we had to go to a full investigation. And they again didn't want to. So we issued a formal decision from our office that the workers would get paid. Ended up being a battle for a relatively small amount of money. They appealed it and everything. But at the end of the day, we were able to make the workers whole for the wages they should have been paid for those hours, plus employer expenses, plus double damages. So they've had a long wait, but we were able to bring this to a close, and we hope that it's really convinced the employer to start changing their practices.
And some of these employers, I understand, these cases often start off just more of a civil sort of suit against them, and let's make the reparations, let's do the right thing. They give them the opportunity, and then when they refuse to step up and like you say, make the workers whole, or try to evade or give misrepresentation of what they were actually up to, then it can become a criminal case, can it?
In some places, yeah. My office is civil law enforcement, like you said, but there's some movement towards really bringing criminal charges. You know, these are laws. This is theft. This is a wide-scale form of theft that really cuts deep into the pockets of people who work hard for what money they get. We want to be able to deter this behavior, but sometimes the issue doesn't get taken seriously enough, I think, in some ways, because it's not always treated as a criminal matter. So there's been movement, but maybe Jeanette, you can speak to some of the movement you've seen in that area.
Yes, we're not just partnered with the Office of Labor Standards, but I work very closely with the U.S. Department of Labor and LNI. And there are some cases that I have submitted that back wages are outrageous and hundreds of thousands. But we are currently working on some criminal cases in which it was just willful violations of these contractors hiding, threatening workers. There's even some possible evidence of human trafficking, which is very common in the construction industry.
The other thing that I think is really important about our office, and this isn't necessarily because it's a city office, we do company-wide investigations. I think that is so important to understand about the work that we do, because you can have one person come forward to say there's a concern, and then that gives us enough information to start an investigation, check the records, and make it right for everybody. So it's not just the claimant themselves who comes forward. It's not just the person who kicks off the case that would get their back wages due there. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, the Office of Labor Standards here in Seattle just celebrated its 6th anniversary.
That's amazing. And congratulations on meeting that benchmark. I think that's really important for folks. What about, you know, just you talked a little bit about your starting, you know, because of the experience and the partnerships with community groups and labor organizations, that you're noticing trends and starting, like, you know, for construction, certainly the phase of construction and knowing how much time you have before the workers are gone is critical. But what are some of the things that, you know, policymakers and others should know just from your travels and specifically in construction and in trying to enforce these laws? And what are some of the common things that, you know, with Jeanette and Ashley, what do you see out there that, that folks should know?
Well, I think the common trend in construction, the number one trend, is that people fail to keep records of the hours that they worked. I mean, and it is crucial in an investigation because it becomes a he said, she said type of argument. So everyone that's out there listening, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if how you're paid. You should always keep a record of your hours worked. There's different regulations, whether it be local, state, or federal, that would enforce these, that would use these records that exist, because a lot of the records that some in construction, when you find a bad player, is that the records have been falsified or there are no records. So having employees have their own record of hours is such a key point in this discussion today. And it would really help anyone's case if they had that information. You know, other issues is that, you know, you find people are not paid overtime at all, or they're paid straight time for overtime. A piece rate, hey, I'll pay you by the foot, and then there's no record of hours. There's a case, another case that Ashley's working on with the paid sick and safety time, where it's a very large case, and we'll be able to talk about it in the near future, but none of these workers were paid for that time. And it's a substantial amount of money that'll be owed to them because they weren't paid for their paid sick and safety time. Those are the trends when you find these violations in construction. But you got to remember there's different enforcement agencies too. And Ashley, again, we want to stress that she does cover the city Seattle limits.
Yeah. And thinking in terms of other trends, you know, I think listeners will probably be very familiar with relationships with, you know, multiple layers of contractors and subcontractors. This is huge. And it's not just in construction, right? This happens in different industries across the nation. But it's one where, you know, companies might hire a subcontractor to perform some of the work, but they actually still have a lot of control over the work that's performed. But because they are a separate company, they might make some claim not to know about wage issues or claim to not be liable for them. And this is something that we can overcome in an investigation in some situations, right? Like, it really comes down to who controls the hours of work, who directs the work, who controls the pay. You can actually have multiple companies have a say in those things. And so we would consider that a joint employment, but it can make it more challenging to enforce. It can make can drag out the timeline a little bit, make it more complex because you have to go through all this additional analysis. You're not just, you know, doing the calculations around, you know, did this person's employer failed to pay them overtime rate. You're looking at, well, did this other company actually have direct control of what was happening, but gets to say on paper that it's all done through this other company that they hired? And that's I think a huge trend, like I said, in construction and also beyond it, that's been developing for a long time. Can you subcontract out of your liability? You can try, but, you know, there are ways that the law will still hold you accountable for that.
We also see a trend in independent contractors. There we'll have companies claim that this worker, oh, was an independent contractor. He had his own company. I didn't have to pay him overtime. But there's laws that protect workers that there has to be an employment relationship. And they have to literally have their own company. And there's a lot of stipulations to determine an independent contractor. But more often than not, you have an actual employee versus an independent contractor, which a lot of people miss, or they think, or you'll have a contractor. It's very common for a contractor to tell you, hey, go get your license, go get your contractor license, and you can work for me. Well, it doesn't work that way. That does not make you an independent contractor. There are several stipulations that have to be met.
Yeah. And as a worker who feels wronged, all these complexities usually mean if I'm worried about rent or food, anything that's going to take more time, it's hard to stick with these cases, and it's hard to recover what you may have been owed. So the stakes are pretty high around some of these decisions, I think, is what you're saying is. And for your office, I'm sure it makes it harder to, you know, get to a judgment on what case looks like, because there's all these layers to get through.
Yeah, it absolutely can add that complexity there. And to Jeanette's point on independent contractors too, you know, almost all of our labor standards laws are written such that they apply to employees. And so when people make, when your employer makes you an independent contractor, it makes it harder for you to claim rights that you should have if you are actually supposed to be an employee. So an independent contractor doesn't automatically get paid sick and safe time. You know, we all get sick. Everybody gets sick. There are days when you just cannot go to the job site. And that should be paid time if you've been working for that employer enough to like build up a sick leave bank. But if you're misclassified as an independent contractor, it cuts you out and it adds this additional layer to the investigation there to establish that you are in fact an employee. So it really cheats the workers of a lot of things. And that's not to say that there aren't legitimate independent contractors out there, right? There are times when that's appropriate, but I think there are people who, you know, sometimes employers either misunderstand or misapply those standards and classify people in the wrong way specifically to get out of paying them correctly. That brings us back to the payroll tax issues, right? That's another way that people get out of having to, you know, pay payroll taxes, pay towards workers' comp, all of these things.
So it sounds like to me, this underground economy really is dealing a lot with the non-union side of things. And our union workers have protections based on the labor agreements that we have signed and that we work under. But there are still ways that a union contractor, if they wanted to, could abuse some of our union brothers and sisters. What are some of the things that we should look out for? Maybe it's intentional, maybe it's not intentional, maybe it's just that let's get her done attitude. But in the end, it really does cost our members in their bottom line. So what are some of the things that we can look out for?
Meal and rest breaks are such a big one. To your point about get her done in the bottom line, you know, and sometimes there's that energy around like, let's all pitch in to complete this. You know, you're entitled to a 30-minute unpaid meal break after 5 hours of work. And if your day is longer, right, if you're pulled to stay longer on the site to complete it, past the 10-hour mark, you get a second meal break. This is something huge to watch out for. Sick and safe time, I think, is a big one. And overtime is one of the biggest ones, too. Hopefully that's not coming up at a union job site. I think it's easier for things to slip around the meal and rest breaks. And, you know, people can be pressured not to take sick time. And that's something to watch out for.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, an employee is asked to work through lunch this one time. And then that turns into a second time and then a third time. And next thing you know, you've given up 2-3 hours a week. And you times that by a crew of 10, now there's 30 hours that the employer is just pocketing and not paying taxes on.
And one thing I think is important to discuss about that is, you know, it does affect us all, right? If you're a union worker, and let's say the assumption is you're getting, you know, by and large paid according to the law, your contractor is bidding also with that agreement in mind. And there's non-union companies that do the same. So there's a lot of businesses that, you know, will get cheated out of work if we allow that to happen. And it can happen quickly in our industry. And like Ashley was talking about, if the project's done and the records are gone, you know, that contractor is going to get another job and another job. And suddenly they're a big player in some of the markets. And that's why I think as workers in construction, it's a big deal, because that's competitive edge. And our business, our industry is very competitive and very mobile. So if someone's going to get ahead somehow, you would be I don't think our members, frankly, would be shocked. I think you know the trucks, you know the companies that you got to look out for. And I think that's pretty important. But I guess, you know, for others on, you know, what would you say is, how else do you see this affecting the industry or what the general public should know about, you know, how these sorts of violations impact us all in our communities?
Again, it's about leveling the playing field, and we need everyone's help. You know, if you're out there on the job site and, you know, and people talk, and there could be, whether it's union or non-union, right? People talk, they know people's wages. You have a lot of protections being a union company, but if you're out there working and you hear that ABC Construction, you know, as an example, that they're not getting paid overtime, or, you know, it affects the entire construction industry, regardless of scope of work. So, you know, be a sounding board for, you know, your fellow construction workers out there, if they're not being paid correctly. Knowledge is power. And I've always used that, because you need to know what your rights are. We're lucky to live in a state in Washington where we have very strict state, local, and federal laws that protect workers. And I think that a lot of people don't come forward because they're scared. but also because of the fact that they don't know that these laws exist.
One thing that union workers can do that's really important is talk to non-union workers about their rights. We have a huge case in front of us right now where, you know, a lot of very vulnerable complainants came forward. We've calculated significant damages on this one. And we asked them, you know, what caused you to come forward? What was the issue here that really made you take the risk to come to us? And they said, well, we didn't even know that we were supposed to be getting overtime. We didn't know what that was. And we were talking to, you know, it was this big project where there's multiple people, you know, all these different companies on site. And so they're talking to people from the other trades. They're talking to people from, you know, unions, people who are covered maybe even under like a project labor agreement, right? And those are the people who say, no, no, you're supposed to get time and a half. You have a right to this. You know, what do you mean you're sick, but you can't go home? You know, by sharing that information, that it's not just about what's in the contract, but it's also what's in the law. That's so critical to ensuring that people can come forward.
So I know these cases are complicated and I'm actually fascinated. I feel like you guys taking on a case is similar to like a season of The Wire, where you have your corkboard and pictures and strings from going from, you know, contractor to contractor, and just it's fascinating and scary too. But if I'm a worker, or if I know of a worker, what's my next step? I think this is, you know, what we're trying to do is raise awareness. So where do I go? What are my resources? How do I get in touch with somebody who's going to help me work through this? If I'm in Seattle, or if I want to contact the council, what are my resources?
There's a telephone number, 253-945-8836. It's our Stop Fraud hotline. People can call there and we get to talk to me. Everything is confidential. I don't move forward with any case until somebody says that they're ready. I explain to them all their laws and I explain to them, you know, what agency would be best to go to. And then we also have our stopfraud@northwestcarpenters.org, which people could email me. Again, it's confidential. I'm the only person that email goes to. I would work through their cases with them to see what are their best options. And then if it's a case that I believe is great for the Office of Labor Standards, I would contact Ashley and Darren and we would discuss it to see if it's a go. Or I would talk to the other state and federal agencies that I work with closely to see if they would take the case. Again, we have to screen. We have to make sure that the person is comfortable. Generally, when you're a former employee and say that you're not being threatened, there's no threats, then they really don't care if their name is used. But if you're a current employee and you're scared to come forward, I will do whatever possible to try to get it to an agency which will maintain your confidentiality. I do a lot of cases myself. You know, if somebody wasn't paid, I call them up and they tell me, no, I'm not paying. Okay, well, fine. I got other resources and we're going to go down the enforcement side. So I am here for anyone who has issues to come forward. And then Ashley, what would be the best avenue for people who want to contact you directly?
Yeah, people can call the Office of Labor Standards for, again, work performed in the city of Seattle. And our number is 206-256-5297. And just leave a quick message and anything that's construction related will get routed to myself and my colleague, Darren, to look into this. And we will be in consultation with Jeanette as appropriate too.
I know my average listener is probably in the union. That's why they're listening to the show. And myself, having been in the Carpenters Union for 24 years, anytime I had any questions about pay or perceived violations on my work site, we always turn to the rep. We're always led to believe that to turn to the union rep first and get those questions answered, or even better, try to look them up in the current contract. So you're advocating to actually call you direct, Jeanette?
Again, I do focus on non-union investigations, but I am also a representative. And so, yes, if there's questions, and I will route them either to their route and or the rep in their specific area if I don't know the answer or if they need additional resources. The main thing is, yes, you can contact me if you want. It's completely, or a lot of people have built relationships with their reps that they regularly see. But yes, if you're a union member, you can always talk to, if there's a steward on the job site, you can always talk to them first and then actually reach out to to a union rep that can help you with collective bargaining agreement issues.
Okay. And if you're someone from the non-union end of the construction, you do have a resource within the Northwest Carpenters Union that you can turn to for consult.
Our union members could easily tell anyone on a construction site, hey, we have somebody that could help you. And they would direct all of those inquiries to me.
Yeah. And that is probably the most powerful thing about being part of an organization like ours is the community relationships we have to make a difference for workers and really solve some of the problems in our industry that can be cleaned up if people just follow the rules, right? And we want to help those workers who are in those situations where their contractor or their employer has decided intentionally to avoid some of those rules, right? So they're breaking the rules to get ahead, and that makes it harder for the honest businesses in our industry. And we talked about that $8.4 billion a year. Sure, people make mistakes, but there's a significant move out there by those contractors that are just trying to cut corners. You know, some might do it on materials, some might do it on other, you know, elements of the project, but for those that are cheating the workers on their wages, their benefits, and committing tax fraud, that's where, you know, we need more of what's happening in Seattle. And I think that's what excites me about this story is I'm excited to go, you know, when I go to other cities and I talk about, if you have laws to enforce, it's these partnerships that are going to get it done in our industry, because these workers are taking on a risk. And what they need to know is there's people out there that are going to help them, that have their back, and are going to make sure that they're getting what they're owed. And at the end of the day, I think that allows us all to compete fairly, which is what we all want. You know, I think carpenters work hard, they'll work long hours, and they're going to compete to get that job done on time, under budget, right? Like or ahead of schedule. That's what they want. But if there's a contractor who's getting ahead by cheating, it's really hard to compete with that. And that's what's exciting is I think we also, you know, Joe, one of the things that I'm excited about is there's also these stories I want the public to know. I think some of these stories are, you know, there's really crazy things that happen that I think we can talk about in the future about just how some of these cases come about, some of the characters involved. It's almost like a true crime podcast, frankly. And that's what excites me about it is I think we have a story that the public needs to not just know, but also ask their policymakers to get more resources out there to help, like what they're doing with the Office of Labor Standards in Seattle. And for those community organizations, we have a lot of nonprofits that are working on a shoestring budget that do amazing work, and pro bono attorneys out there who, you know, are still paying off their student loans, but making miracles happen. I mean, this is the type of story we want to tell.
I agree, Matt. I think we have some really deep and rich soil in which to dig into and get those stories out of. And I really do appreciate everyone's time for being on the show today. Thank you so much. And I look forward to having you back again in the future.
Our guests today have been Jeanette Aranda and Matt Swanson from the Northwest Carpenters Union, and Ashley Harrison with the City of Seattle Office of Labor Standards. I appreciate them taking the time to explain the impacts of wage theft and tax fraud and how crooked contractors are costing our economy billions. Together, we can stand up and put an end to this criminal and costly behavior. Our families and our futures depend on it. To learn more about the UBC's National Tax Fraud Days of Action, visit stoptaxfraud.net. And until next time, this is Joe Cadwell reminding you to work safe, work smart, and stay union strong.